Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. This week, we will be talking about young men in the community with Carmen Vega, Lawrence Adibi, Shannon McCollum, Jamal Al-Salam, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I'm delighted to have in the studio with us our special guests, Shannon McCollum, Lawrence Adibi, Carmen Vega, Jamal Al-Salam, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Before we get started with our roundtable discussion, let's go around the table and tell us your name and a little about yourself. Let's start with Carmen.
Okay. I'm Carmen Vega, and I'm a poet, performer, and an actor. And let's see, I just started a poetry writing workshop in the community. I'd like to tell you about that later, but that's basically who I am.
Where did you grow up at?
Oh, my goodness, in New York City. But I've been in L.A. for a very long time now, and this is home right now.
Yeah, okay. That's Lawrence.
Okay, how you doing out there? My name is Lawrence Adibi, originally from Tulsa, Oklahoma, raised out here on the West Coast, actor, writer, comedian, and entertainer extraordinaire, you know? Trying to put it together, you know?
And how long you been out here in Los Angeles?
Been out here for about, let's see, since 12 years now.
Okay, let's move on to Jamal. Tell us about.
Hi, I'm Jamal Salam. I'm a writer, actor, director, producer, and longtime California, Los Angeles resident. Originally from New York, Albany, New York, and glad to be out here and to be on with you and Miss Earlene in Qumran.
Okay.
Hi, and I'm Shannon McCollum. I'm a writer and also a community activist. I like to be involved with anything that's in my community that's positive, especially downtown here. I live downtown and love every bit of it. And I just thank you for being here with everybody today.
Okay. Now, we went around the table, and we also got Ms. Earlene Anthony. Tell us a little about, you'll be joining the round table also.
Hi, I'm Earl Anthony. They call me Earl. I'm an actor, playwright, and I'm also a member of the MacArthur Park Neighborhood Council.
Okay. All right. Now, in the past 2 weeks, we've had a killing in Florida of a 17-year-old African-American that reminds us of the Trayvon Martin situation. I'd like to read from an article by Imani Jackson, and then we get into our discussion. Yesterday, Michael David Dunn pleaded not guilty to charges connected with the November the 23rd shooting death of 17-year-old Jordan Russell Davis. The unarmed black Florida teen was killed under circumstances many aligned with Trayvon Martin's murder in late February. The Orlando Sentinel reported the incident in which Davis and several other teens sat in a vehicle at a Jacksonville, Florida gas station when 45-year-old Dunn pull up beside them and ask the teen to turn their music down. After exchanging words with Davis, Dunn shot at least 8 shots at the vehicle, killing Davis, and after firing, Dunn fled the scene. CNN reported Davis' father's response to his son's death. Dunn did something that there was no defense for, Ron Davis says. Davis stated that his son did not own guns, was not part of a gang, and was a good kid. Davis said that when Don pulled out the gun, the teens didn't believe it was real and then realized it was, tried to reverse the vehicle before gunfire. And so let's get into our a discussion about this, because we hear all the time about the problems that confront our young peoples in the community. Gang violence, police brutality, lack of jobs, messed up schools, just to name a few of the problems. And a few weeks ago, we discussed the Larry Aubrey article in the Los Angeles Sentinel, where he stressed that the three major problem areas was in the area of lack of leadership, violence, and poor education. So on tonight's roundtable discussion, I want to talk about solutions to the problem, because we always talk about what the problem is. Time to look at some solutions. Let's start with our first things that we're going to throw out to the roundtable. What is our most pressing needs for our young people in the community? Let's start with Carmen.
Well, I think those three points are really, they hit it on the nail. You know, there's a real lack of leadership and role models for young men. I think that the prisons have become the rite of passage for young men. In order for you to be a man and to feel yourself to be something, you have to have gone through this process, which is dehumanizing. And on the contrary, you know, it should not be an option at all for young men to have to go through that process at all. You know, and that's just the fiber of our society is just breaking apart. And I understand, you know, there could just very well be a growth or some kind of social structure that's evolving. But I think somewhere along the line, we got to pull back the reins and make that and give that impetus or whatever change is about to evolve, give that a form. It can't just be running rampant. And I think that's what's happening right now is things are just out of hand.
So we're talking about the lack of leadership.
Leadership and violence is an alternative for our society. You know, I don't think violence should be an option right now, you know. I think there should be genuine rites of passage. And recently I've been thinking a lot about a think tank, you know, that there should be an actual formal think tank in our communities. And not just one, but maybe small enclaves of community groups putting together and saying, hey, what do we need in our communities to help us grow, to bring our young people out of these options and give them real options?
Exactly.
You know, and if schools aren't training and schools aren't educating, then maybe we do need organizations to call together their resources and start creating a room for that to happen.
Beautiful. Okay.
Yeah, very much so. I like that.
Let's go to Jamal. Go ahead, and then we'll go to Jamal.
Seem like you have with something.
Yeah, I was going to respond to Carmen's. Again, violence is a key issue, and especially you know where you have a criminal justice system like in California, which is number one in the world. The idea of education, a think tank is a great idea. I'll come back to that in just a second. But the idea of education, holding accountable the educators to be able to make sure that the students that they have are coming out educated is going to be really, really difficult. Most teachers who are career-oriented want to only teach those that are easy to teach. They want A students. And they can just go ahead and say, all right, do this, do that, and come back and I'll give you an A or I'll give you a B. Well, there are some C students, there are some D students. When I was working in education, there were students identified as autistic who were not autistic. They were just problem children. Mm-hmm. So they sent them to a room where they could be with the other problem children. That still goes on, I believe, today. I haven't been working with the education system. One of the things that I did, I personally feel part of, is Audubon, where we had an after-school program that we brought laptops in for the students because the idea was laptops were like books, so they would roll them down the halls and let people check them out each period and then check them in, you know, after the period was over. So a student only had his laptop for 45 minutes if they got there in time. Mm-hmm. So we put together a little thing with one laptop per child, and we're able to get some computer, some laptops for students over there. It changed the whole atmosphere of the campus. Mm-hmm. Students were going from being rebellious and out of control to wanting to be nerds.
You think it put them in touch with technology?
Putting them in touch with the technology. A lot of them, as soon as they got them, they knew how to chat. They knew how to do all kinds of things with these laptops. And I'm talking about fifth and sixth, seventh graders.
Let me ask you this about the whole education thing, and then we'll move over to Lawrence in a minute. The great thinker Carter G. Woodson, he wrote this excellent book at the turn of the century called The Miseducation of the Negro, which we know we're talking about the African American. And he emphasized where he pinpointed the problem of having a Western education as opposed to Eastern education. In other words, he felt that, you know, Dr. W. E. Boyce, he come in with this concept of the talented 10th, where he felt that 10% of the African American get the education and they would reach back for the other 90. But Carter G. Woodson say what would happen, and it seemed like this is what happened, is that if this 10% get a westernized education, then they would no longer be able to relate to the other 90, but they'd be able to, their value system is that of the mainstream.
Exactly.
And
we see that.
What do you think about that?
Oh, we see that, definitely. Again, how do you, education is westernized. The whole world is westernized in education, essentially. Chinese come to the United States to study at UCLA, USC. Many groups of people come to the United States to study. So the value system of the Western way is already instilled. What I liked was what the people in New York were trying to do in regards to establishing a curriculum that was rigorous enough to be able to manage what people need to know for the 21st century. Mm-hmm. And that's to me, seems to be a better point of view than, I'm, you know, Western values is something that we have to live with and often confront, because yeah, their values are not human, in many ways, humanistic.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that Carter G. Woodson was talking about education as a whole, by emphasizing Western education, which has its origin from Eastern education, especially Islamic Spain and Islam.
What we're talking about, how it affects us, is public education. Mm-hmm. We are more prone to public education, which is a 1930s concept or a 1920s concept based on a late 18th century point of view.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in terms of education, you know, has to advance with the population that's available.
Yeah.
But by the same token, who is affected? We are.
Yeah.
Because we are trying to get a free education.
And one other thing I want to point out about public education, and this is the paradox, the irony of it, is that the whole public education system was put together during the Reconstruction period by ex-slaves and, you know, the whites in the South right after the Civil War. Irony of it is the whole, you know, the Southern concept who challenged the education system after Brown versus Board of Education to integrate everything without realizing that it had its origins from these freed African slaves. Yeah, that developed the whole system.
As well as ministers, you know, mm-hmm. The church was very involved in that aspect also.
Yeah.
And what I was trying to point out is, excuse me for just holding up for one moment, mm-hmm. is the idea that public education is a necessity when you have a society that is trying to build itself up from absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
We can't afford, like Obama, to send your child to Sidwell. Yeah. You know, I mean, come on. And even if he had that opportunity, which he did, to send him to a public education, they chose private. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, and most of private educations are Catholic or religious in base.
Okay.
So there's the value system.
Okay, we're going to come back to that. And the question was on the floor is, what is our most pressing need for our young people in the community? And let's move over to...
Man, personally, feel like I hear this all the time, okay, on the streets. Anytime I'm in a group and this question gets brought up, somebody always has to come out and says, we need guidance. Black people need guidance. Bottom line. And it's true. Mm-hmm. You know, coming up as a young black male, I personally...
Tell us your name again, though.
We all go through, like, a natural
young
male black rite of passage. Mm-hmm. And it's the point where you grow up and...
get closer to the mic.
Okay. And it's the point where you got to decide stuff, because it's like you grow out of that cute phase and the world starts looking at you differently, you know, somewhere around puberty. And you got to figure all this stuff out. You know, the gangs come into play and school and what comes on after school and just all social issues bombarded with just puberty, you know? Mm-hmm. And at the outcome of it seems like either dead, jail, or your friends, you know, everybody just kind of disbands. It's called the killing fields, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and if on a more, I guess, hands-on level, if society or just the community could just come together, because it seems like we can always put the laws together and we can detail the laws, but when it comes to something to really construct and really promote something helpful to us, it all kind of seems vague.
Mm-hmm.
Or something to the point where it's something where there's money for it and there's a source, but after 2-3 years it gets tapped out and it's just another joke in the community. It's like there's never really nothing that's structured and has some kind of concrete result where it can really benefit a lot of people, like something like the Boys Town or something. More of those. Yeah.
Well, right, because during the 80s, I thought was one of the biggest losses that we had during the 80s was the comprehensive training program, the CEDA program, that didn't really get a chance to take off. I thought that was one of the excellent programs that we need right now. We're going to talk about that a little later on when we talk about jobs, too.
Leadership programs, you know, that actually taught people skills.
Skills and on-the-job training.
And responsibility and accountability.
Accountability and a paycheck.
That was important. That's right.
Let's go to Shannon.
I guess I want to say, especially like in the black community, it is an age-old problem where we always say leadership. And I've always felt that there's leadership there, but sometimes the people that are in leadership are broken. And you can't be an example to someone on how to be if you yourself have necessarily experienced that or you yourself are broken, mm-hmm. right? So I've always felt that when you look at a lot of the young men that get locked up, pretty much all of them have one thing in common. And you know what that is? Mm. They have health problems. They don't get their eyes checked. They have other problems that they don't find out until after they get locked up. Because when you get locked up, what's the first thing they do? They run and check. Do you have TB? Do you need glass? Do you need all this? And then a lot of them find out what? Oh, this tension and anger a lot that I have was maybe I couldn't see. You know, I took a guy one time. I got him out of gangs. And I took him to an eye doctor. When he put glasses on, it hurt him. Just for his eyes, just to adjust to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think... They say it starts in the home, but they need to talk more about health in schools.
Mm-hmm.
You can take your class on it.
Let me ask you this. What do you consider to be the most pressing problems for young people, especially the young male in the community today that they face?
I want to say that in the black community, there's not too much for black men to do but hang out on a corner or hang somewhere where they find camaraderie with other men of what? Yeah. We don't have anything to do.
Yeah, so like there's a need for cultural arts programs and after-school programs.
But we have those.
Sports.
We have those because all of us come out of entertainment, get in entertainment, and they dominate it. Yeah. But what ends up happening is that in other communities, when someone makes it, they may not come back, but they leave something for the next person to feed off. We don't do that. We don't leave something to say, okay, now, I'm not here. Why? Because I didn't made my money or whatever and gone on. But you know what I did? I left this. That's why in other communities, they have scholarships. They have all kind of stuff that the next person can pick up and go on.
Yeah, as compared to a scholarship that's at UCLA from a guy who's already a big superstar and wants his son to become a super football star too. You know, I mean, his father has enough money to buy the whole school. But yet and still, when it comes time for the scholarships, he wants to get in line and say that he earned it. And I could appreciate that too, but by the same token, there are a lot of guys out there or young women who are trying to get through college, period. And, you know, it could be much more help to them than this guy who's already born into with a silver spoon. Well, and there's black people like that.
I was talking before college.
But even before. You know what I mean? Even before.
If you are a black male, you don't play sports, you don't know, I'm talking about for ones that don't. If you don't play sports, if you don't know an instrument, if you can't write, act, dance, preach, right? What is there for you?
What's your social cause in America?
Right, because in other communities, what do they see? Well, if I can't do none of that, I could be a lawyer. I can own a business. I could be, there's other array of things that they see that, okay, I can do. Because in our community, if you can't do anything,
and you're useless.
You're standing on the corner with 10 other guys. Well, you're saying what? We can't do it either.
If you are not mentally strong enough to see that, I think, because that's probably the biggest pressing problem right now, is resisting the temptation from like mainstream negative images force. And stuff
exactly.
Like, you gotta play basketball. You gotta add these $100 shoes. Nigga, you can't rap. What's wrong with you? All these images to the point where if you're a young black man, you're looking like, okay, yeah, that's how I'm gonna be able to buy my mom a house. That's how I'm gonna get a girlfriend and all this stuff. And if you're not mentally equipped to see the most of this, that's is right. Just entertainment.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's like, how do you look at yourself? How do you look at yourself? And if we're living in a society where we're constantly motivating and feeding the wrong social values, you know, and the same kind of segregation that creates the society that lives in a void, you know, because suddenly you have to look at an enemy from without yourself that has a color barrier on it, that has a color name on it, that has a cultural name on it, as opposed to the things that are genuinely keeping everybody segregated so that they can continue to, in my opinion, to dole out crap for you to buy, you know, because it's an economic society. It's a capitalist society that just wants you to go ahead and buy those $100 sneakers when you might have something else more important and more pressing for yourself, like your checking your eyes, hello, you know, or something that might be real values, and that's what I'm talking about. We need a think tank.
How are you going to find that?
I don't like this propagation of segregational thinking. Okay. I don't like it personally, I think it's institutionalized in our schools and our media and everywhere we walk and everywhere we talk. And a multicultural society stands to be a very difficult thing for us to even create.
Yeah,
with this dialogue.
Let me throw this out. There's a couple more things I want. But first, Arlene, do you have a comment?
Yes, right. I do.
Go ahead.
We have gotten over slavery, 400 years or so ago? We don't have any more excuses about anything. We have the same playing field that everyone else has. When I go to the library, I hardly ever see a young man of color in there doing anything. No kind of on the computers or anything. But we don't have any excuses anymore. We dwell on what happened in the past. We need to know the history of what happened in the past. That's great. But I'm going to say this one thing. There are a lot of opportunities out there for our young men. If they don't have a GED, they can get a GED. There are a lot of professional schools out there, and they offer courses. You may not want to be a medical technician or whatever, but there are a lot of advantages to going to these professional schools. The Latinos has tapped into them. The Asians has tapped into them. Where are our young men of color that are hanging out on the street saying, I can't do whatever, or I want to be a rapper or whatever? Everybody's not going to be a rapper. Everybody's not going to be the next Michael Jordan or whatever. Take advantage. These professional schools are available. You can get tuition. You can get grants. You know, you may not want to get the school loan because, you know, that's life stuff. But no more excuses.
Okay.
I'd like to say something on that.
Okay, hold a minute. Now, go ahead.
Okay.
I got a call, but go ahead.
I agree with you. There's no more excuses.
That's right.
But you have to understand, for some young black men, if there's no dad and they're raised by the mother. Now, here's what all I'm saying is.
Go ahead.
If your mother, for whatever circumstances in life, if she hasn't understand how to expose you as a man to them things, it could just be difficult. Mm-hmm. So there's no excuse. Doubt. But mm-hmm. And I'm not blaming the mother, but it is kind of like if that's, because what ends up happening is you end up asking some guy on the corner about life advice, mm-hmm. which leads you, you know, lost.
Okay, we're gonna get back into that in a little detail. We got Dr. Mongo on the phone. Who is this?
Hello, Ishmael.
Hey, Dr. Mongo. You got a question or a comment?
Look, I'm very sorry that I couldn't make it tonight. I'm very much under the weather.
Okay.
And I really wanted to be there, and I hope Jamal got there in time, met up with you.
Of course, I'm right
Jamal
here.
And Carmen is right here.
Okay.
Do you have a question or a comment?
No, I'm sorry that I cannot hear the show. For some reason, it's not on my computer, but it's on there, but I can't hear the program that's taking place now.
Okay.
So I just thought I would call in and just let you know that I'm very sorry that I wasn't able to make it due to an illness, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And if you want to listen to the show, go through the Internet Explorer when you pull it up.
All right, that's where I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, all right, Dr. Mongo.
We're talking about some really heavy subjects, yeah. Mongo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Lack of leadership.
That's why I really, I really wanted to be there, you know, and give some of my opinions, humble as they are.
Okay. You sick? Go get some rest. Now drink plenty of water,
yes.
Juice, orange juice, and all of
get
that.
Get you some chicken noodle soup.
Yes. That's what I'm doing. Did Judy come on yet, or she wasn't able to connect? I hear
not yet, and I'll fill you in on all of that.
Okay, then, and give that information to Jamal, and he'll pass it along to me.
Sure
I'll
will.
Do that.
Sure will, Mongo.
All
hey,
right.
Thank you for calling in.
For call. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, Dr. Mongo. Yeah. Now let's move on to the next question that I want to bring out here, throw out here on the floor to get some comments from. What can the religious community do to help our young people? Let's start off with Jamal. Let's move on.
Well, you know, we were just talking about religious in regards to education. African-American males at this time, it's very key. A lot of them could facilitate and help them find out where the scholarships are.
You have work source
entities throughout Los Angeles, and none of them really do any career training or career preparation. this is where the church could fill in that gap, making sure that, you know, one of the things I think Obama was trying to negotiate with was having certificates available, you know, being able to pass one of these programs, whether it be medical technician or computer technician. That's at one level. And another level is the university. And another level is being professional in the world, in the workplace. We are a global economy.
Okay. Now, Lawrence, what can the churches do?
What can the church do, right?
Yeah, what for our young people out here, how can they get more? What do you think?
I wish the church can get more involved in the leadership issue, because they'd be the best just... Next step, I think, to this too, in order to kind of coerce that type of initiative, just like the church. They're right there.
Because one of the main problems that you have with the religious institution and young people is so many young people that's disenchanted, moving away from these religions, not just the church. These the Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, all of them are losing a huge amount of young people who no longer... I don't say that they don't believe in the doctrine, but they see too many contradictions. They don't see anything happening there.
Mm-hmm.
Let me move over to Carmen. What do you think?
Well, Melvin, I think you hit it on the nail. I think that there's a lot of contradictions when a religious entity is there. I personally go to church to seek spiritual guidance and a spiritual connection, and oftentimes I have to wait... this discourse on politics, discourse on different things that don't really have much to do with my sense of spirituality. Mm-hmm. And I think that it, again, that begins to break up the fiber of something that I might be seeking. And so, you know, you seek and you shall find, you know, there's that wonderful tenet. But on the other hand, there's just a whole disarray of misguidance mm-hmm. going on in our communities. It's not just one element. It's not just the education. The education, obviously, to me, doesn't fulfill what our society in general is geared to, right? It doesn't meet the needs of our employability. Mm-hmm. And then our churches, in my opinion, should be there to foster social values mm-hmm. and support families. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you are a single mom or, you know, young person with a sense of loss. You know, there's a lot of lost people out there in our churches. Yeah. Where are we guiding our people?
Okay.
You know?
Arlene.
I wanted to talk about maybe the job situation with the churches.
Go ahead.
I'm going to talk about it. The three major religions that you talked about, I think if they would come up with a system where they could network with large corporations or businesses to set up kind of internships where they could have young men come in, give them a chance. I know that they could give them a chance. Have them come in and do internships for a certain amount of time. And this way they could get trained and perhaps go on to getting a job after their internship is over. I think that this would work.
Okay. Shannon.
I guess I want to say it depends on which community in and when you speak about the church is doing stuff, because a lot of things have broken up to church and faith-based,
mm-hmm.
where faith-based can hold a work source, but a church can't due to religion and business. But I think overall ministry in itself in general has made a shift where they used to preach wealth, prosperity. Well, that's done with. Now we're dealing with people with real life issues, because there's no sense in making you rich if you have a bad attitude mm-hmm. and you have other problems. Now, I know plenty of wonderful churches that do have youth programs that do work. Mm-hmm. Right. One of them I seen for myself is at the City of Refuge in Gardena.
Mm-hmm.
They have an excellent youth program once a year, and they've been doing it consecutively. I might be wrong, but I think it's about 12, 13 years. Once in September, they hold a Stop the Violence concert where it's geared toward for kids. And I almost want to say that when you say church and helping, Well, now we live in the age of mega churches, so there's plenty of help, if you understand what I'm saying. We're dealing with buildings that are, you know, stadium size full of people. But I think it's up to the person to try to get your child to be there. You know, it's not about those denominational issues. It's about the resources that get funneled from faith-based to church to the community. And there's a lot of them out there, because now we're dealing with, you know, it's not just about teen pregnancy anymore, is it? We have some other very, very deep issues that kids deal with nowadays that I almost want to say the religious community, due to their own red tape, they can't talk about it. But through another youth program, be through another faith base, it could be speaked on and dealt with. Okay. To bring healing for that.
Great, great, great point. We're going to come back to that. I want to go to now Sunday, November the 25th. We're going to come back and get more into our discussion. But Sunday, November the 25th, 2012, at the downtown L.A. Exchange, Drama Stage Qumran held a forum to call attention to the homeless problem. I would like to play a portion from one of the speakers, Jamal As-Salam. It's about 3 minutes and 50 seconds.
I'm an actor, writer, producer, director. I'm living on and off in Los Angeles since 1985. I've seen this community grow in many different ways, dynamic ways that have made it an exciting place to live in. I come in after Mayor Tom Bradley had the Olympics here, and it was just a great city to be a part of. I did a lot of work around the gang troops with Bilal and my good friend Michael Lindsay, who has since passed. I wanted to talk today, Ishmael. I thought you were going to have like a round table, you know, which is what he usually does. Everybody gets a chance to say a little something. I prefer that way because now I'm taking all the energy that all you guys are sending, and hopefully there's a lot of love out there. Trying to send that back to you. The idea of poverty in this city is an amazing thing because Jesus said, the poor will always be amongst us. I'm not sure if, given the economic conditions of this particular economic system, that we can eliminate poverty. But there is enough resources for everything that you want your child to achieve. Our biggest problem, of course, is police brutality. This has been the core base of my life in Los Angeles. How to eliminate people going into the criminal justice system and becoming a part of it. A lot of it has to do with around the mental health issues, especially in downtown. There are people who are preying upon people who are mentally challenged, from the police to the ex-gang members to different sects, to the family members, to everybody, trying to take advantage of them and their dollars. They have money coming in, usually from the welfare or from SSI or something else. It's not a lot of money, but it's enough to be to create some kind of criminal activity. And that's another big problem with downtown, is that a lot of the stores are overpriced. A lot of the resources are overpriced. And that shouldn't be in a city of this size. I was listening to this guy on the road this morning. He's building this fabulous $50 million center next to the Disney Hall here. And one of the things that he was saying about making Los Angeles, there are 50 million people in this city. And when you have a population of people who are being washed away, forgotten, swept under, living in the streets, pissing in the streets, you know, defecating in the streets, and 50 million people, that's not, there's something wrong there. Because you can facilitate that in many different ways. And a lot of it has to come from community activism. And there are a number of community organizations that are trying to do great things. Like I said, I'm not really affiliated with any particular organization.
Okay, Jamal Al-Salam. Jamal, I want to, can you comment real quickly before we move to our community calendar on you perceive police brutality as one of the major problems affecting us?
Absolutely. We documented, when I was working with Michael Zinsen, we documented hundreds of deaths by police since the late 50s and before then. It's part and parcel what's going on. They've increased their sensitivity a little bit. But, you know, I have a young brother sitting right next to me, obviously intelligent, obviously, you know, well groomed. And yet and still, we could go out here tonight and both of us would end up in jail for almost no reason.
Profiling,
not as much as it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but nearly.
Okay. All right. Look, let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we come back to our roundtable discussion.
This is the community calendar for the month of December. The Roby Theater Company, in association with the Latino Theater Company, presents Anna LaCosta. This play is written by Philip Jordan and directed by Ben Guillory. The performances are, and it runs through November 10th through December the 9th, Thursday, Friday, and Saturdays at 8 p.m., and on Sunday, 3 p.m. The Los Angeles Theater Center is located at 514 South Spring Street in Los Angeles. For ticket information, you can call 866-811-4111. Tuesday, December the 4th, from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran Veterans Community Theater Workshop presents the Anti-Violent Situation Coping Group with the motto, Enough is Enough, No More Violence. This will be the Genesis chapter of the Anti-Violent Situation Coping Group. The instructor will be Melvin Ishmael Johnson. The workshop will also, from time to time, invite guest speakers to come and participate. The first situation dramatization will be the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman case. And the workshop is located at the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard, that's in Los Angeles, and all are welcome to attend these groups. To learn more about the Anti-Violent Situation Coping Group or to participate, please contact 213-908-6587. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. And our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Earlene Anthony. Yeah, we're winding down, and we'll get some more discussion in with our roundtable here in the studio with Shannon McCollum, Carmen Vega, Lawrence Adibi, Jamal Al-Salam, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Let's jump right back into the roundtable. Let's try to have some little short, because I want to get into the open mic section. But I do want to talk about what can we do to create more jobs in after school for our young people? And can we go around, can you give me like some little short comments on that as we move around? Who want to pick up on that?
I'd like to say, depending on the area that you live in, and what's available of what needs to be done to give you a job. I mean, obviously, if you live downtown, they can come up with all kind of stuff. Like, there's an organization that called Chrysalis. They come up with people picking up trash. It's a job. Mm-hmm. But maybe in your community, trash ain't the issue. Maybe it's leaves. I mean, who knows? Whatever that needs to be done. Maybe it's graffiti. But whatever that needs to be done, if there's a way where funds are allocated to be able to do that, because in every other community, Latino, white, Asian, they do that. But we don't do it in ours. Mm-hmm. We kind of just...
Okay. But I'll... And then I'm going to move around because our community, if we still have what you call a so-called historic community, because I don't know if we have Watts anymore. Or we might have a little piece of Inglewood or Leimert Park. And you got African-American all over.
That's right.
I think the key is to concentrate on jobs for youngsters that fit within an age bracket regardless of their racial makeup. But let me just get a... let me throw something else out. How can we create more unity among our young people, especially racial unity? Anybody want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, I'll take a shot at it.
Well, I think that I have, you know, there's a lot of reaction to a lot of what's being said, but I know Jamal mentioned the fact that, you know, there's police brutality. I think overall there's a perspective and a perception that, you know, people of color are criminalized in the media and a lot of these things. In order for you to begin to break down those constructs, you know, because they start us early thinking those ways, mm-hmm. and the media continues to perpetuate, there could be actual discussion and workshops where you are taught how media actually does that. Okay. You know, how many numbers of criminal issues are presented to you on a daily basis on the news and in the media, showing you black people and people of color and Latinos as criminals versus any other color.
Okay.
These For are, instance. Though that is a pertinent issue, and it isn't just an issue that affects black people, it affects the people of white, because they act on it as strong as we do, you know?
Okay.
Them act on it is what's going to make us act on it to, like, let me not act on what they think will get me in jail, you know?
Okay.
It's that strong.
Right. Right.
Okay, we're going to come back to this discussion in our closing comments, but let's move quickly to our open mic session and have a couple of Carmen, can you give us the piece that you've been doing,
Team Beats? Okay. I wrote this a while ago. It's part of my Reflections from the Well. A room full of youthful energy, young folks vivacious and eager. A room full of insecurity, inhibition. A rock spastic band frantic beating on a trap drum set to a bust your ears out. Tune played loud, projected at your senses to saturate the feelings you avoid. They jump in their seats but stay motionless. Their knees bop up and down in tune with their heads. Uncontrolled dolls and involuntary movement. Too cool, they remain submerged in emptiness. They jump as they wish they could jump from their skin. They bob as they wish they could bob from their sleeves. Their fear of feeling the moment trapped in the skin of a teenager, aging into adulthood. And Y2K doesn't make the prospect as cool as their demeanor. Barely bobbing, staying cool, no longer a teen, growing into a world at war external, while the war internal bobs to the cool beats of a drum that mimic feelings they wish they had. But it is nowhere in sight. The frenetic displacement of logic. Tomorrow may not be here, and suicide is my neighbor's dilemma. I'm too cool and no longer a teenager. Aging into adulthood, I'm cool in a bar, bobbing to the beat of another humdrum, to the beat of a trap set to drown out the beats inside. Because I'm cool and I'm numb, cool and numb. I'm cool.
Okay. Carmen Vega, Carmen Vega. Okay, let's move on to the in-house poet, Jamal Al-Salam.
This is a poem that I wrote earlier this year around September, actually July. It's called Occupy 2012. The first finale, reasons, fine tune, atlas, watched out for muggings, and freedom is fully loaded. 6,000 rounds sweeps you under the rug at Batman Rising. And if Occupy is revolution, what are the demands? With no demands, it's time to disband. And we should extend a hand and prepare a new stand, set our collective minds with a new plan, which does not include massive zeros, gone global, utopian social. Like glasses of champagne overflowing with taxation without representation, I bet you 10 grand Obamacare will not pay for my medical marijuana. As we mark time to find the terrorist crime has moved the world to its knees, and social networking has pushed kings and queens out of the way of the people's freedom. We must stand back and can't get back behind the curtain for the second finale. In a civil world, breathing the free, fresh air, the smoke chokes us in fear. The fury takes a back seat to power. Zoom in on the ivory towers. The victim's life really sucks. Behind the Occupy is the Green Lady holding a torch.
Okay, and you was going to do another one for us, Jazz.
Yeah, Jazz is Life. This is for you, Ishmael. It's dedicated to my aunt and uncle as well, my sisters and my cousins. I used to name my poems after jazz songs. I mean, I grew up with jazz. I can remember the 1962 Newport Jazz Festival, yeah. My mom, her sister, and my favorite uncle took us as a family on a trip. I remember falling asleep to the Jazz All-Stars. I came to know jazz. For me, it comes straight out the womb, pulsating with a heart and soul. When he told me Miles died or when Dizzy died, I cried. I knew it was like a genius leaving the room, like a Charles Wyatt or Gordon Parks picture being rolled up, never to be seen, felt, or heard from again. Don't get me wrong. There's still some great cats out there like Herbie Hancock, Freddie Hubbard, and Grover. Oh, Grover Washington Jr. He's gone too. And the roll call goes on. But for me, jazz is life. And life is jazz. All improvised and coming out simply beautiful.
Okay, we're winding right down. Shannon, why don't you tell us about your new book that you were telling about your book coming up.
It's actually being edited right mm-hmm. now. It's looking at coming out next year. It's called The Black Community and the New Revolution.
Mm.
This is a collection of things that I found from working in the black community, volunteering political events where I've seen a lot of issues concerning black men in general. It's more geared toward men. It's for men and women that I think that need to be addressed. And I'm coming out of an approach in contributing. I'm not a leader. I'm not looking to lead nobody. I think it's as black men, we need more solidarity.
Yeah.
But some have asked me, well, it's revolution. No, we're revolutionary people because we've just evolved over the times of being here in the United States. You know, one of the things that I was studying some years back that Huey Newton created a saying that's called revolutionary suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where you stand up for something and die for it, but somebody behind you picks it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of feel that we still live in that, but the revolutionary suicide is we're killing each other mm-hmm. over a revolution concerning gangs, so forth, that's meaningless.
Okay.
So.
Thanks, Shannon. I'm looking forward to that book. That's one of my favorite books by Huey P. Newton, Revolutionary
You know
Suicide.
That one, huh? That's right.
Yeah, oh, yeah. okay. Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to my co-host, Earlene Anthony. I wish we had time for closing comments, but we're rolling down. My in-studio guest, Shannon McCollum. Jamal Al-Salam, Carmen Vega, and Lawrence Adibi. Let's give a hand for everybody. Now, please check out our past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, skidrow.la, and dramastage-qumran. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving Creator Spirit be upon you and up on your family. And get involved with some young people out here. Get involved with some young men and provide some guidance,
wonderful forums,
and some mentoring.
Wonderful opportunities for discussion.
Thanks, Melvin, for creating this kind of forum because it's men like you that where voices can be heard and people can gravitate and learn from.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Great show, man. Mm-hmm.